This is the Best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, brought to you by Coach Pete at Capital Financial Advisory Group. Visit us at capitalfinancialusa.com. This is the Adam Gold Show.
I am Adam Gold. Welcome to Monday, the first, chock full of football Monday of the season. College football had its... I shouldn't say wackiness. It had its college footballishness. We had all sorts of weird stuff. North Carolina allowed 25 consecutive points to Georgia State. Still won. Okay. And the Panthers did Panthers things. All right. Well, thank you very much for hanging out with us on a Monday afternoon. I am Adam Gold. This is the Adam Gold Show. Normally, at least for the last 4 months or so, I have been introducing Dennis Cox as the producer of this program, but we kicked Dennis out. Not really.
We did. It's okay. You can say that.
Victoria's here.
Yay!
And you're going to be here. I mean, I've seen some sort of weird scheduling, but
I know.
Basically, you're here. This is you.
Yeah.
All right. So Victoria's here.
Yeah.
So so be nice to Victoria. Now, Dennis asked me, you're going to start fresh at zero and place your bets.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's do that.
Right, because Dennis actually got it back over into black figures.
Oh, wow.
So he did, yes.
Man.
You're going to start back. You're going to start fresh at zero.
Let's go.
So so good luck when we get to that point.
You.
We got a long way to go until we get to that. I got a lot of football to discuss. But congratulations. Thank you very much. We will. We never blame anything on you,
okay.
Ever. I take full responsibility for everything. I am the quarterback.
There you go.
I'm the quarterback. We are not going to pass blame. We got a lot of things to do today. You can watch us on TV. Hi, WRAL Sports Plus. You can get it Apple TV, Android TV, Fire, Roku. Channel 34.1 if you have an antenna and you're in the Raleigh area, 1257 on Spectrum Cable. You can stream us online, WRALSportsFan.com, all of that, if you are so inclined. All right, should we go? Should we start?
Let's go.
And I should say that at 1 o'clock today, we are ready for your hot takes. And I've got hot takes on the Panthers, but I'm sure your takes on the Panthers will be way more scorching than my takes on the Panthers, because I wasn't that put off by what the Panthers did.
Yeah.
Yes, I know you were.
Yeah.
They lost in excruciating fashion.
Brutal.
Right? You look like you're going to get run out of your own building. Somehow the Browns leave the door open and you walk through it. Now, you didn't bash the door down like you could have,
no.
But you walked through it, you got the lead, and then, yeah, we know what happened. Look, real quick, because we're going to talk about this with Will Brinson starting in about 10 minutes. They were second best all game long. Browns are the better team. But they somehow found themselves in it thanks to a comically bad busted coverage on the Robbie Anderson touchdown. Mm. Like, if the corner's going to pass it to the safety, there's got to be a safety to pass it to, and there wasn't. But then the Browns got lemon booty, and like, we don't know what to do. And they ended up punting the ball back to Carolina, and all of a sudden you're down at the 15-yard line, and here is where, if you are mad... Here's the place in the game I think you can be mad. Even though I was not mad. Forcing a team to use their timeouts is awful, I think. But I've been saying this for years, and every coach in the league does it. There are so many ways to stop the clock in football when you have the ball. Just because you have no timeouts left doesn't matter. We need to understand this. Every coach needs to understand this. Other than throwing away the chart, they need to throw away that, because by running the ball three times, yes, the Browns didn't have any timeouts, but guess who didn't need any timeouts? They had plenty of time to get as far down the field as they needed, And by the way, that 58-yard game-winning field goal would have been good from 75.
Yeah, from here.
That was crushed. Rory McIlroy doesn't hit drives that far. All right, we'll get more about this game in a minute. Next. 15 years and 9 days after App's improbable win over Michigan at the Big House, the Mountaineers were on their BS again. Absolutely awesome. Final score 17-14, not at all indicative of the level of dominance. It really wasn't. App was better from start to finish. They dictated all game long. 41.5 minutes time of possession for App State at Kyle Field. More than double the offensive plays run. It was like 83-39. They did it without Nate Noel. I don't know. Is App going 11-1?
Maybe.
All I could think of watching the game was, wait a second. How did they allow North Carolina to score 1,000? Like, I'm not saying North Carolina's offense is clearly better than Texas A&M's. I'm not saying, but Carolina put up 56.
Insane.
Come on, App.
Yeah.
Absolutely incredible. By the way, big winner this weekend, the Sun Belt.
Mm-hmm.
Holy cow. Marshall goes to Notre Dame and wins. Georgia Southern wins at Nebraska, which, frankly, I guess isn't that hard, but still.
It's an accomplishment.
Right. I mean, you fired the coach. We'll talk about that later. So good weekend for the Sun Belt. All right, moving on. Adam Gold in studio with my friend Coach Pete DeRuiter with the Capital Financial Advisory Group. We are talking retirement. Coach, how does longevity risk figure into our retirement and income plan?
This is the best of times and the worst of times, Adam. The longevity risk means we're going to live too long. But to me, every day I live is not too long.
Right, absolutely.
Good. So we want our money to outlive us. And unfortunately, many people I've seen, you out there listening, maybe one of them, your money is not designed to outlive you. You might outlive your money, and that's not what we want to have happen. Because when we get to that day after you run out of money, it's not going to be a fun time. So let's design a plan that guarantees you'll never run out of money. We call it the GPI plan, Growth Protection Lifetime Income. For the next 10 people, this is a golden ticket, Adam. $1,000 value, we're going to do it at no cost or obligation.
And all you have to do is call. We make it so easy. Would you like financial independence into your retirement and beyond it? 800-661-7383. That golden ticket is a $1,000 value, or you could text Adam to 21000 for Coach Pete DeRuiter.
UNC
is good TV. I mean, let's just be honest about that. I used to say this about App State a long time ago, where, you know, regardless of the outcome, App State was good TV. North Carolina is good television. That game against App last week was fun, great watch, and thanks to going on walkabout for about 30 game minutes, North Carolina, Georgia State was good television. The Tar Heels actually had to rally. They were down. They were trailing 28-21 to Georgia State after leading 21-3. What are we doing? They looked like they were rolling, and then the Panthers scored 25 straight points. Here are North Carolina's possessions in between 21-3 and the time they found themselves trailing 28-21. Punt, downs, interception, fumble, punt.
Wow.
They didn't do that in 60 minutes of football at App.
No.
Amarian Hampton had the touchdown run that leveled the score, but even that, like, there was nobody. He just ran straight up the middle. It was a huge hole, and there was nobody in the second. No, there was nobody. He, like, could have looked around and that's it. We're done. Like, why even make the guy run the next 50 yards? All right, touchdown. Good. Let's go. It's like an intentional walk. We no longer make the pitcher throw four balls. We just put four fingers up and we're done. That's what we should do there. So Carolina ultimately goes ahead. Did a big play after big play after big play drive that made it 35-28. Georgia State, by the way, not a pushover. I am in no way dismissing that. I think it's a pretty good win for UNC on the road. So we'll see. They're off this week, and then an angry Notre Dame will come to Keenan Stadium. Notre Dame I mentioned a few minutes ago, Marshall at Notre Dame. I have a hot take about Notre Dame, too. All right, NC State practiced well. What else are you going to say?
No, I'm just like, I can't wait for the hot takes.
Right.
I love it.
NC State practiced well. That's what that is. That Charleston Southern is a practice for NC State. A lot of people got a chance to play. Good. They had like 42 receivers, caught passes. They used three quarterbacks. Good. That's the way this is supposed to go. Supposed to work when you're playing Charleston Southern. It's an exhibition game. Of course, it counts, but it's basically an exhibition game. Texas Tech, by the way, NC State's next opponent, just beat Houston. Formerly ranked Houston. It doesn't look so easy now. Good thing the game is here, but I believe it's a primetime game, isn't it? It's like 7 o'clock on ESPN2 next week. Yeah. So we'll see. Now that your practice is over, now we're going to get a chance to see what NC State has against the Power 5 opponent. All right. We have other ACC games. We still have three more games we have to talk about real quick. Wake got Sam Hartman back. They went to Vanderbilt and slugged the Commodores. This was never really in doubt. Wake was a two-touchdown favorite on the road. Hartman had 300 yards passing and four touchdowns. A.T. Perry, five catches, 142 yards and a score. Vandy turned it over three times. And Wake is now 2-0 with a 45-25 win. And they look every bit the Wake Forest part. This is what they're going to score a ton of points. And if they don't get manhandled at the line of scrimmage by maybe a bigger, more physical team, I think their defense is good. They certainly have skill position taken care of. They are going to be a pain in the rear end for anybody. And speaking of pain in the rear end, explain Duke.
Woof.
How, if not, it's good.
Yeah.
Four in a row now over Northwestern.
Mm-hmm.
Northwestern's going to cancel the series. 31-23 was the final. Exciting start for the Blue Devils. They were up 21-0. Duke scores on their first three possessions. Similar to last year, by the way, where they got out fast against Northwestern. And just like last year, I would say Northwestern probably ran out of time because they were the better team late. But you only get 60 minutes to prove it. So all the points count. Best player on the field, Northwestern running back Evan Hull, had 278 yards of offense, but fumbled the ball as he was crossing the goal line. My initial feeling was, oh, man, he had crossed. But nope. And just absolutely, I think they called it right on the field, too.
Yeah.
So that's pretty good officiating. Officials never get they always get hate, but that's a pretty good call. But replay would have taken care of it anyway. It's clear the ball is on the way out before he gets to the goal line. So in a way, Duke probably catches a break because the way Northwestern was moving the ball, I think it's a better than 50-50. They would have converted the two-point conversion, and the way they were playing late, Duke's offense was sputtering at best. It likely adds up to a loss, but again, Duke played well. 220 yards rushing, two different 100-yard receivers. I think Riley Leonard's good. I don't know how great he is, but I think he's good. And I'm telling you, Jordan Moore, Northwestern did their best to shut him down, but that's a heck of a touchdown catch that he hauled in, although it did look like he might have been, I don't know. I'm not going to, who cares?
Not going there.
Touchdown. Touchdown, Jordan Moore. The Blue Devils get North Carolina A&T and then play at Kansas. East Carolina was too good for Old Dominion. Too freaking good. Holt Naylor's, Keaton Mitchell, too damn good. By the way, tough weekend probably to be the Monarchs.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If you're Old Dominion, maybe, in light of Queen Elizabeth passing,
right,
maybe Monarchs were going to be up against it all the time. Zero turnovers for East Carolina, 531 yards of offense. It's a pretty good combination. All right, one more thing before we get to Will Brinson. So Notre Dame lost at home to Marshall. Everybody's mad in South Bend. The Irish, I thought, played pretty well against Ohio State in the opener at the Horseshoe, but Ohio State is a national championship contender. Notre Dame is not. And then they host Marshall and just look like a mess. And that's unfortunate that they're 0-2. A little preview of what's coming up later. I mean, if Notre Dame was in the ACC, I mean, they'd still have a lot to play for this year. All right, Nebraska lost at home to Georgia Southern, but they pick up a win yesterday. Scott Frost shown the door. Here's my overarching point about this. If you're going to fire Scott Frost after two games, then he should not have been the coach to start the season. I mean, look, I am not selling Scott Frost on Nebraska. But if you've seen enough after two games, then you saw enough after 4 years. He was 15-30 before this year. What made you think anything was going to be different? I mean, seriously, that's just silly. So, hey, I don't care. Certainly, the coaching carousel is good for talk radio. But I just don't understand bringing him back if you're going to fire him before we get to the middle of September. The list of candidates to take over in Lincoln is interesting. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. Alabama wins at Texas by 20-19. And they plummeted in the polls all the way to second. The polls are just, I don't care about the polls. If you complain about the polls on September 12th, today's September 12th. If you're complaining about the polls on September 12th, then you have a problem. You just do. So don't bitch about the polls now. There's no reason to do that. Like, App State should probably be ranked. But you know what? Win a few more games, you'll be ranked. End of story. All these things take care of themselves. They always, always do. And remember, the polls are just so TV knows which games to hype. That's it. It's all they are. It's all the only reason why we have rankings. So TV knows which games are good. But it was typical college football. Typical. I thought the ACC did pretty well. Even Pitt's loss at home to Tennessee was, I'm not saying a good outcome, because losing is not a good outcome, but you lose Slovis to an injury. Your backup quarterback, who is hobbled, still gets you in the end zone to tie the game late. Your defense just couldn't come through and stop Tennessee in overtime, and then your offense is exactly what your offense is without Keaton Slovis. So, but, you know, they're Panthers are 1-1, even though they probably should have lost to West Virginia to start the season. But we'll see. We'll see how Pitt does the rest of the way. But I thought it's been a pretty good start for the Atlantic Coast Conference. And the fact is, you got Wake at 2-0 and Duke at 2-0. And Clemson just, whatever. Who cares? Clemson probably wasn't trying very hard against Furman. That's all I could say. Clemson probably just wasn't trying very hard. But it's going to start getting real here soon. It is. I think Clemson plays Louisiana Tech, still not feeling that as any sort of challenge, but we'll see what happens going forward with the Tigers. But it was a very good weekend for North Carolina college football, especially at the Division I level. The only loss, I believe, was Charlotte. Charlotte lost at home to Maryland, the Big Ten powerhouse Maryland. I put this tweet out yesterday or Saturday afternoon, and I think it was misconstrued, and maybe I needed to be clear. Good weekend for North Carolina college football. You know, the Tar Heels win, the Wolfpack win, Duke and Wake win, ECU wins at home impressively over Old Dominion, and App State, and I said, pulls off stunning upset, sort of, in College Station. And here's why I said sort of, and I'm not sure why this was misconstrued, but it was. Because nobody should be surprised when App wins a football game like that. We just shouldn't. I actually think if you go back in your memory bank, there were other games that they could have won that they didn't. I mean, specifically, I remember the game at Tennessee a few years ago. Now, Tennessee wasn't great, but you're playing in front of 100,000 people in Neyland Stadium, and it's a game you probably should have won but didn't. Like, they are routinely in this position. I think they should have beaten Miami a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
In Miami. So this is app. And that's what, I mean, we kind of all missed, right?
Yes.
And just the fact, and I mean, I didn't pick them to win. I thought the game would be good, but I mean, I certainly didn't pick them to win at Texas A&M, but I'm not surprised. And if you're surprised that App beat Texas A&M, then you haven't watched a lot of App State football, because they almost always seem to put themselves in that position. So good for them. But he joins us as he does every Monday. All right, let's start with the Panthers, because that's what we should do. I actually thought, and all things being equal, the fact that they took the first half off of competing, I thought they weren't as bad as I thought they'd be. They couldn't run it, though, and they couldn't pass protect. Other than that, they were fine.
Okay, I thought they were awful. I mean, I know they got back involved in the game, but it's a Browns team with Jacoby Brissett at quarterback. And a Browns team that didn't, frankly, like, I mean,
they were bad too. Really,
you know, if you take the CJ Henderson, you know, tackle of a wide receiver in the end zone instead of an easy touchdown, you know, the Panthers could have, you know, I don't know. I thought they were bland, boring, impossible to watch. And then the game became fun when, you know, like all these NFL games in 2022, you know, it's almost impossible to like snuff out a team anymore. You don't have anybody that like actually closes. It feels like every single game somehow there's yesterday it felt like, you know, there was some kind of comeback involved with whoever was losing. And the Panthers are just an example of that. I mean, the Browns had that busted coverage.
Yeah.
Baker waltz in the end zone. And then there's the busted coverage and all of a sudden it's a game. I think it speaks more about, you know, where the Browns are probably at than, you know, what the Panthers are. I thought that was just a miserable start to the game, followed by some, like, a little bit of false hope. Maybe the Panthers are the new NC State. How about that?
Well, here's the reason I said my expectations for the Panthers, and maybe I'm different, and I told you this before the season, I think if everything goes right, they can win 8 games. Now, for a team like the Panthers, everything never goes right. But that's what I thought. I thought if they max out, they could go 8-9. That's my ceiling for them is that. And I think 4 or 5 wins is sitting there waiting to happen. They couldn't run block and couldn't pass block. So you just can't get that that creative with your offense if you can't do either. Their best play was the snap that rolled along the ground
that McCaffrey picked up
and ran for like 25 yards. And so my feeling was just roll the ball back to McCaffrey on every snap and just do that.
I mean, Baker had 4 fumbles and I think all were on snaps, right?
It was Baker's first half, and we'll just say that maybe he had put a little too much pressure on himself for a number of reasons. But Baker's first half I kind of like Baker Mayfield. But it was terrible. It was so horrendous. And I don't think he was great throughout the game. He threw some nice passes. He made some good throws, but he was getting passes knocked down. The interception was just awful. He overthrew everybody except the last safety. So Baker wasn't good.
Nah.
There was nothing good. But my point was that everybody wants to blame Matt Rhule for this. And I just didn't see anything except maybe running it 3 times when you got to the 15 on the final drive. That, to me, is the only thing that I could criticize Matt Rhule for.
Yeah, outside of the fact. Yeah, I mean, yes, if you're letting Matt Rhule off the hook for his football team being bad.
Okay, yes.
Then yes. I mean, if we're just talking about specifically were there in-game situations that Matt Rhule completely screwed up? No, not really.
Right. They used their timeouts well on defense to get the ball back with plenty of time, right?
Well, I mean, like, you're like, oh, little Jimmy, you didn't poop your pants today. That's so great.
Look, I have a new puppy. I have a new puppy, and the puppy goes outside, and it's you throw a parade, right?
Right.
So Matt Rhule didn't screw up. So he's the puppy that pees in the yard.
So the offense looked terrible. Completely dysfunctional for like 95% of the time.
Yeah.
Christian McCaffrey wasn't properly used at all, and the defense, you know, they couldn't pass block, they couldn't run block. The defense was fine, I guess, although they missed like 42 tackles.
The defense is not fine.
Other than that, Matt Rhule did a pretty great job.
I'd have to take away
all the basic fundamentals of football that a coach is supposed to impart upon his team.
Right.
Other than that,
I have more problem with the way Kevin Stefanski coached than I have with the way Matt Rhule coached.
I really didn't have any beef with Matt Rhule, but I mean, like, I think that it's important to note that if your team stinks at doing a lot of things, then you know the onus ultimately falls on the head coach.
Right. I completely agree there. If you were the Browns, wouldn't you have run Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt 100% of the time because it didn't look
tackle? I mean, like, I think I was texting my buddy Matt Gray about it. He's like, are we this bad at tackling? He's like, Nick Chubb, the best running back of all time. But about that time, they Fox, but I was like, I mean, it's a little bit of both, maybe a lot of both. It was like, I guess CBS put up the graphic that was like, the second all time in yards per carry ahead of Jim Brown is Nick Chubb, behind only Jamal Charles. But at the same time, it's like, there were so many instances where if Carolina just made some fundamental tackling and got him on the ground, they would have prevented the Browns from extending several drives.
No, there's no question. Two things about the final drive, and then I want to move on to real football. The roughing the passer penalty on Brian Burns. I'm not a blame the referee guy. I'm convinced that the Panthers would have screwed this up anyway. But the roughing the passer on Brian Burns on the first play of the final drive was terrible. I mean, it was a tragically bad call. There was no contact with the head. It was just a football play. Would the field goal have been good from 75 by that kid?
I mean, that's like you're talking about with the
field goal
with the fake spike.
No, yeah, I don't even care about that. I say he spiked it.
Yeah, but you can't. The rule book says you cannot delay. It must be one continuous motion from the snap to hit, throwing it down the ground. Any attempt to any delay whatsoever, it means it's intentional grounding.
Yeah, but he didn't fake it. Stand up and then spike it.
It was not one continuous motion.
Yeah, okay. I'm not. I mean,
by the letter,
I understand.
If you're gonna call the letter of the rule the forceful contact to the head or neck area, which is what they try to do with the Burns thing, and you can argue that like,
but there was no contact to the head.
I know. Yeah, I was like, so you see the replay, you're like,
yeah. All right, I wasn't put off by that, but I now understand what you're saying. All I was saying was the field goal would have been good from 75.
Yeah, but I don't know if you try a field goal from 75, and there's like a 10-second run. It just changes the whole. Like kicking from 75, kicking from 65, or was it 65 that he made?
58. Yeah, I mean, it was like 30 feet up the net.
Yeah, it was smoked. It was
ridiculous.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, it just.
I understand what you're saying.
If you have to carry a pond that's 275 yards out there, you're probably over swinging, right? and like when you're over swinging, you're not 58. You feel confident. You just come through with a nice stripes. 68, 70. I mean, like. You feel like you're kicking a Hail Mary.
Maybe I'm not even going to argue that. I think you might be right. So the Panthers got screwed. It's kind of life as a Panthers fan. Sort of like being a State fan.
That's right.
All right, let's get to some other games between two teams that I don't know might have postseason aspirations. I don't think either of the teams we saw yesterday in Carolina are going to be postseason teams. I have no faith in the Browns at all. Bucks did as little as possible in the 19-3 win over Dallas, but the overriding takeaway is that the Cowboys are not going to have Dak Prescott for about 2 months. They were trash before then, but I saw the injury and thought, well, that's not good. That's never going to be good when you follow through and your throwing hand smashes into a bevy of arms and helmets. What does Dallas do now other than prepare the firing of Mike McCarthy?
Yeah, I mean, watching Mike McCarthy as he was getting news from the trainer, and that was pretty incredible because he's like, you could read his lips. He's like, you got to be bleeping kidding me. And then he's like, what? Like, and you knew it wasn't just like a GM thumb or a sprained thumb or something like that. It'll be interesting to see what they do because, you know, in theory, you can try and go trade for Mason Rudolph from the Steelers or trade for Jimmy Garoppolo from the 49ers. I don't know that the 49ers will want to trade Jimmy Garoppolo after, you know, the debut of Trey Lance in Chicago. Weather was a problem for sure. But, you know, they may not be interested in it unless it's like the right price. There's just not a lot you can do. The Cowboys have systematic problems in place with their roster that people have been yelling about. Cowboys fans have been yelling about and the media have been talking about for like 3 or 4 weeks now. And it's, you know, when Tyron Smith gets hurt, all of a sudden the offensive line isn't quite as good as you maybe think it is, Jerry Jones. And your wide receivers, you have CeeDee Lamb. He's amazing. Dalton Schultz, you franchise tagged. But, you know, Michael Gallup's hurt and you traded away Amari Cooper. And now all of a sudden, you know, your wide receiver core is not that deep and not that talented. And it reminded me a little bit of the Rams in the, you know, when against the, and granted, Bills, Bucks, I mean, you know, both very good teams, both very good defenses, where, you know, it's like this lack of, you know, they were kind of, you know, just, whatever. Like, you know, we're fine. We think, you know, we've got depth here. We're going to let these guys take some bruises. But like the reality is when you start a rookie left tackle against a really good defensive line, you know, you're going to put your quarterback in pressure situations. And when that happens, he may end up, you know, banging his hand on, you know, like, I mean, that's what ended up happening. And to be fair, like Smith, the rookie actually had a great game at left tackle, but it just, you know, it's a trickle down effect where, you know, when you have to move guys around like that, all of a sudden you have more, you know, less talent across the board at offensive line. And it just caught up to the Cowboys very quickly. And I don't see how Mike McCarthy makes it to like Halloween.
Yeah, look, honestly, Mike McCarthy should never have been hired to be the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. I don't know why they did. I mean, Mike McCarthy's body of work is just okay. That's all it is. I know he won a Super Bowl, but you can't help but win one Super Bowl with Aaron Rodgers. Yeah, I mean, it's like you could. It's sort of like you and I are going to play golf in a few weeks. One of us is going to make a birdie. It doesn't mean we're good, right? One of us is going to make a birdie, but we stink. So, you know, Mike McCarthy won a Super Bowl because he has Aaron Rodgers. All right. I wasn't crazy about the Bucks, but maybe they just didn't try to do too much. Let me ask you about another game from the NFC South.
I'm an adventurous person, but I'm also a careful person. We want to get out there, but we also want to make sure we're safe and our loved ones are safe. Good thing there's the OnStar Guardian app. Safety services right on our phone. We can get roadside assistance. We can share locations with friends and family. We can even get help in a crash in any vehicle on any motorcycle. Finally, something both sides of me can agree on. Adventure safely with the OnStar Guardian app. Download today from the App Store or on Google Play. Be safe out there.
Should I make something of Jameis Winston rallying in the fourth quarter to get the Saints past the Falcons?
Probably. I mean, he was like 14 of 16 for 230 yards and two touchdowns in the fourth quarter after, or maybe three touchdowns in the fourth quarter. After going like 12 of 20 for 50 yards in the first three quarters. Yeah. Just so bizarre. I mean, you sort of wonder, is this what it's going to be where they try to be conservative, efficient Jameis, have a conservative, efficient Jameis in this conservative, efficient offense. And, you know, then all of a sudden it's like, well, it's the fourth quarter and we're losing. Let's uncork Jameis, sort of like a homeless man's Russell Wilson Seahawks situation. If that's the case, I'm not buying in. But I mean, I think the Saints, by and large, look like a good enough team with the talent they have. Where if they can kind of figure out with the coaching and the quarterbacking, then maybe this is a team that can challenge the Bucs.
I like the Saints. I really do. Although I thought their defense wasn't at nearly as good as it needed to be, but they did ultimately win the game, and they held the Falcons to a whole bunch of field goals. All right, Will Brinson, senior NFL writer, CBSSports.com, Pick Six podcast moderator. They led with the Browns, not with the Browns, with the Buccaneers and Cowboys. And if I'm not mistaken, they went to the Bengals and Steelers. All right, sir, Joe Burrow threw four interceptions. He turned it over five times. Yet, they got the game to overtime. I mean, I'm still more on the. I'm still more impressed with the Bengals than I was with the Steelers. Is that fair?
And if you look at the stats, it's like you're like, how did the Steelers? I mean, you know how. I mean, like, this is the turnovers, right?
Yeah.
It's like you look at the stats, like the, you know, the yardage and the first downs. It's like, oh my god, the Bengals blew out the Steelers. T.J. Watt, you know, the Pete Briscoe had said on the Pick Six podcast last week that when he was at Bengals camp. And he's a big Bengals homer. Like drafted Burrow, he said they're going to win multiple Super Bowl titles in the next 10 years, which
they might.
An insane thing to say, right? But you know, actually looked kind of intelligent when they were close to winning this past year. But he said that Burrow looked real, and because of that burst appendix, right. And I think that carried over into the game. Like he clearly, you know, wasn't. That thing was a major medical surgery. It wasn't just appendicitis. It was a burst appendix that he had to deal with and sort of recover from, lost a ton of weight. And so I think that, you know, getting the timing of that really threw off the start of the season. But the fact that they were able to rally and, like, get, you know, have a chance to win the game, play with that backup snap, long snapper, the backup tight end who's, you know, who botched two of the snaps. It's a hard thing to do when you're, you know, it's not your job for sure. They could have easily won that game. Easily should have won that game. That's just feels like to me a fluky week one where now all of a sudden it's like you look at the Steelers, like, man, that offense can't do a whole lot.
Terrible.
They lose T.J. Watt for a month. I mean, there's some optimism, I think, today that it might just be a slightly strained pec and not a torn pectoral. It would end the season. Strain could, you know, keep him out a few weeks. But I think that, you know, no, like watching and that the way that offense operates, it is hard to imagine the Steelers being particularly dominant, especially if Najee Harris is out for an extended period of time. I think he's probably going to be fine too. But if you're the Steelers, I think you're considered fortunate you got that win, and now you try and like just grind something out against the Patriots in week two.
I mean, their offense is really non-existent, and even way before Najee Harris got hurt, I mean, they weren't effective. So, I mean, I love Mike Tomlin. They'll figure out a way to get to 9-8. I'm sure. But if there's no T.J. Watt, that will be a major problem. All right. I am not concerned at all in spite, because I watched this entire game, not concerned at all about the Green Bay Packers. I was more impressed with certain elements of the Minnesota Vikings, and I think Green Bay's defense is probably pretty good. I know the talk is Aaron Rodgers struggled. I kind of think Aaron Rodgers' wide receivers struggled a lot more than Aaron Rodgers struggled. The stuff that he was criticized for saying in the preseason, I think he was kind of right.
Yeah, I mean, like, they have a, you know, Christian Watson said after the game, like, he would have called that 99 times out of 100, and he would have said 100 out of 100, but he just dropped it.
So right.
He didn't feel comfortable doing that. And, you know, Rodgers, they dialed the exact shot play they wanted. And if that game's 7-7, it's a totally different ballgame.
Yep.
I think Minnesota, you know, it's a drastic change from Mike Zimmer to Kevin O'Connell. It looks like a positive drastic change off the bat, especially on offense. Adam Thielen said he'd never played an offense that kept, quote, attacking, attacking, attacking. You know, that's something that they didn't do when Zimmer was there. They would sort of try and win with defense and just, you know, like run the ball, you know, just, you know, old school coaching football. And O'Connell, like, clearly, you know, is going to get the best out of Justin Jefferson. I mean, if he's doing that, you know, I think Jaire Alexander was kind of mad about the way that the Packers defensive coverage operated. I think he wanted to sort of be more just put me on Jefferson versus
right.
what they did for some part of the game plan. But I mean, Jefferson looks like he could be an absolute monster this season. Kirk Cousins looked comfortable in the offense. He should. He's with O'Connell in Washington. I think we're going to, the takeaway sort of to what you're saying is like, we're going to get a couple weeks in and be like, oh man, like the Vikings offense was like, it was just like it was, Green Bay's defense is good.
Yep.
And the Vikings offense is just real good. And so like this game won't look the same in 3 or 4 weeks. I don't think.
I'm impressed with both teams. I think the Packers will be fine if the young receivers, and there were a bunch of young receivers who screwed up. That drop was like really, really, really bad. All right. Lamar Jackson. We'll get to the contract in a second. My take on the Baltimore Ravens was they weren't that good. Good thing they were playing the Jets. Is that fair?
Yeah. Yeah, I think they were a little sloppy. They were 100% sloppy to start. And I think the Jets' defense is a little bit better than people think, too. The Ravens couldn't run the ball very – but they couldn't run the ball very well. And, you know, Lamar – I mean, it didn't feel like a team that was completely dialed in to start the season. But eventually they got going. They got their shot plays working. Rashad Bateman, that big bomb down the field. Yep. Devin Duvernay.
Rebecca De Mornay. That's what I'm going to call him for all season long.
Rebecca. I know what it is. But him emerging as maybe a wide receiver too, and Bateman becoming a legitimate threat would be a pretty big, you know, boon for this Ravens team that's been criticized for their pass catcher. So I think it's really more credit the Jets early on, and you know the Ravens were a little sloppy versus. Like, I think they were going to be fine. To me, that offense will start getting going, but a little surprising at how slow it started for sure.
All right. Now, as for the contract, I don't know why the Ravens keep doing this. Because do they believe that he is not serious? So if you offer him a $250 million contract, smart people understand the only number that really matters is the guarantee, and you offered him less guaranteed money than the Broncos just offered Russell Wilson. Less guaranteed money were basically the same as Kyler Murray got with Arizona. What are you doing, Baltimore?
I got nothing. I don't know. I mean, I think.
What are you doing?
I mean, I think maybe they think that. I don't know. It's weird because it's like, you know, you look at the Cowboys and it happened to them with like three guys, right? It's going to happen with Dalton Schultz. So it's like, just pay the people then. Like pay the piper. Just pay the piper and get on with it, because you're either going to have to pay Lamar Jackson at some point, or you have to let Lamar Jackson walk. And the longer you wait to pay him, the more the average annual value of the quarterback position goes up, and the more money you have to give him. If you'd done this deal last offseason, you could have. Yeah, they could have done it last offseason, right?
Well, here's
because he's fifth-year option. They could have done it last offseason, and just it would have been a lot cheaper. And you could do it this offseason, right? Cheaper than it would be next offseason. That's just how it works.
If he had done it last season, you wouldn't have had Deshaun Watson's fully guaranteed contract to deal
with.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Here's the other thing, and this is my counter if I'm Baltimore, and we're not going to get a chance to talk about Russell going back to Seattle because I want to deal with this. If you're Baltimore, can you make this move? You can franchise tag him after this season. But just don't do the exclusive franchise tag. Let another team come in and offer sheet him.
Yeah, you get two first-round picks.
I mean, no, you're going to sign him. You're going to match the sheet.
You can match the offer sheet. Yeah,
but
yeah.
The franchise tag in in that situation is lower, right?
Not by a ton. But
it's lower.
The whole point is, I have to double check. But the point is, like, a non-exclusive, the non-exclusive is just lower, but you can... If no one makes an offer sheet, then he has to sign or not play. And if someone makes an offer sheet, you can match it. If he signs their offer sheet, the team can match it. And if you don't match it, you get two first round picks. So I think that is probably the route that they will go, because it gives them a little bit more flexibility. Even though you're sort of running the risk of, we could let this guy potentially walk, and we believe he's a franchise quarterback.
You are the man, Will Brinson. We'll talk to you next Monday, my friend.
All right, man. See ya.
This is the Adam Gold Show.